You know what? I'm going to change pants too. I don't care. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about Captain America Civil War, also known as Avengers 2.5, but, you know, Black Panther. Woo!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
I'm the third person mentioned in this podcast.
True facts. And today, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. We're going to talk about Captain America Civil War.
It's been out for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, we're gonna open it up, so...
It's the third Captain America movie. Some would say also the third Avengers movie,
mm-hmm. kind of. Mm-hmm.
But, This was a fun movie.
Tim just saw it.
I just saw it yesterday. Because I was out of town.
We saw it
opening weekend. We got to see it at the Icon. It was plush and fun, and we had a good time.
Did you guys 3D it or were you?
No.
Fuck that.
We're not 3D folks.
Fuck the 3D.
I have yet to see a movie in 3D that didn't. You know what? No, I'll take that back. We saw the very first Lord of the Rings movie. Or the Hobbit movie in 3D.
Yeah.
And that was good because the 3D was more atmospheric than like shit at your face. But shit I don't do action movies in 3D.
Captain America's shield flies in your face.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Falcon flies in your face.
Spidey's webs in your face. Flying debris in your face. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
What is this, Captain EO? Are we also like amazed that happens now? That people
are here to change the world.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the first time I saw Captain EO, people being like grabbing in front of them, it was so real.
I seriously don't get that. Mm-hmm. I have never found 3D at all realistic.
No.
Anytime something flies off the screen, and I don't know, I've got astigmatism, so that could be it, but mm-hmm. when stuff flies off the screen, it's like there's two of them, and I can see both of them. There is no illusion to me that anything's coming off the screen.
It's like the first, you know, movie theater footage of trains and stuff, and people would be like, oh God, a train's coming, and run out of the movie theater, like, screaming.
It's gonna hit us!
And you're like, are they dumb? Are they stupid?
Well, yes. But
same with 3D. So, not 3D.
Marvel.
None of us saw Civil War in 3D.
No. And so, that's all we'll say about
3D. I really liked that this picked up right after Captain America 2.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like it was, what, days?
Well, no.
Maybe a couple weeks?
Because Ant-Man happens.
Because Ant-Man and Age of Ultron happens.
Months, maybe up to a year.
Okay, that's okay.
But, I mean, still, the not a lot of time has elapsed. There are still some wounds there.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel, maybe it just didn't feel like it because when they left, it was like Bucky on the run, Cap trying to find him, and then the movie starts with Bucky on the run and Cap just found him.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. So maybe that's when my brain is like, oh, it's barely been any time.
So the plot basically is Cap is trying to bring his friend back, Bucky Barnes, with the Winter Soldier. And Bucky is still kind of Manchurian candidate-id.
He definitely has PTSD at the beginning there. He's fragile.
And so Bucky may or may not have committed some act of terrorism that now everyone is out to get him and Cap is defending him. And also the other point of contention is the Sokovia Accords,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like the Superhuman Registration Act from the comics.
They took the comic Civil War, and I'm not a big comic reader. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of the Civil War storyline.
Sure.
It feels like they kind of took that storyline. I mean, because the prime antagonists in that storyline are Iron Man and Cap.
Yes, and they are on opposite teams.
Yep.
And they took that same dynamic, and they sort of changed the reason that they were having this conflict.
A lot of the people are even on the same side.
Yeah, I was going to say, they didn't change it much, because in the comic, Iron Man is in favor of superhuman registration, and Cap is against it. So it's very similar in that way.
And it's, in the comics, it's, there's this little town that gets blown up as some rookie-ish, like, new warrior superheroes are filming themselves being superheroes for a reality show, and they fight some villains, and one of them, their powers goes wrong, and they end up nuking a small town, in, like, right next to a school, in an elementary school.
And they're mutants, so they're young mutants, too, so they can't control it.
And so the people start saying, you know, look, these people have powers, they're deadly weapons.
Remember Genosha.
And Genosha as well, and so they start using this tragedy to get superheroes to register.
Which is exactly what happened in the movie. So that's that was
it's not necessarily to register, but they're using the same thing. They're using a tragedy to get the superheroes to basically bend to their will. To be under government oversight.
Right.
Basically to only do what a particular panel of the UN gives them give them the instructions.
Put them on a leash. And let them be mad dogs on leashes that can be used for... They're weapons of war, really. They want to turn them into government-owned weapons of war.
It's like nukes. They need to be, like, regulated and handled, and, you know, there needs to be some level of oversight because they are, you know, more powerful. Mm-hmm. In the comics, it is quite a great deal more about secret identities. And
they don't really deal with that here because, like, you know, Spider-Man's in the film, and... In the comics, Spider-Man actually is on Team Iron Man at the beginning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he reveals his secret identity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But in the movie, you know, they sort of give you the idea that Spider-Man's only been around for, you know, less than a year, 6 months. Yeah. And Peter Parker is clearly still hiding his identity.
Yeah.
In the comics, he ends up switching sides.
Yeah, I knew that
and
too.
And so does Black Widow, which she kind of does in this a little bit. She lets them get away once.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Cap's identity is a secret in
the comics.
In the comics.
In the comics, Cap's identity.
Yeah, so for quite a while.
But during this time.
In the movies.
I don't think at this
in
point.
The movie, in the movies, and I, they made the right choice in the movies in that it was really hard with the way they told the story to have his identity be secret. Mm-hmm. So they just,
when you can't hide actors' faces behind masks.
Right, it's not the same.
That's a Hollywood won't let that happen.
So I thought that this movie was it was action packed and really fun, and I really enjoyed it. But I don't really. It's weird because I feel like I don't remember scenes the way that I did with any of the other ones, like Guardians of the Galaxy and other ones that we saw. Where I immediately was like, oh my god, that scene with this was so funny and this was so great. But when I think back on this movie, I'm trying to remember like anything specific, and I have flashes of, oh, that was a cool fight and that was a cool fight, but nothing like really stands out as being amazing.
Every awesome moment that isn't like a funny joke or a cute character interaction that I appreciated, every awesome fight moment that I can think of either involves Black Panther or Ant-Man.
Yeah.
The
I thought Black Panther was insanely good.
The Ant-Man fight stuff was like the airport.
Yeah, the airport scene
is great. Both the use of his power shrinking and getting big, and then he uses a thing to like grow a thing as they throw, you know, to hit someone with something as it's increasing in size.
Yeah, there's some cool Ant-Man shit going on.
But Black Panther is just fucking brutal and awesome, and those vibranium claws.
Makes you excited for the Black Panther movie.
Oh, he fought like a fucking dervish. It was amazing. He really fought like scratching and biting and punching.
Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther, T'Challa. 2008 will get his standalone movie, and there have
2018?
Yeah, 2018, rather.
See, it's easier when you say 20, and then you're 2018.
Oh, is it? 2018. Yeah. No, it works fine.
2018, you need to mess it up. I'm just saying.
So, they've said recently that in doing the casting for the Black Panther movie, so far, 90% of the cast is black.
Nice.
Which is great.
It should be.
Well, right? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But
that doesn't mean it's good. I mean, that doesn't mean it would have been, you know. Like,
yeah, yeah, right.
obviously spoilers, but it feels like Winter Soldier might show up in that one.
Maybe, yeah. Quite likely.
I think...
The Claw, the guy who gets... Andy Serkis in Age of Ultron, the guy who gets his hand cut off, who's smuggling the vibranium, he is a classic Black Panther villain. And he loses his hand and gets a vibranium-like sonic claw or whatever.
That could be cool.
I think my favorite scene that I do remember, at least, was the when Ant-Man... Captain America and everybody.
They drag him out of the van.
And they drag him out of the van, and he's like, oh, it's Captain America. Oh, hey, I'm a big fan of your work. And then he's looking at everyone else like, oh, hey, you're great. You know, but this guy, you know, like it's really.
I know you too. I know you're also great.
You're also great, yeah. It was really cute and just awkward. Like, I really liked it. I really liked his. I cannot remember. There's so many. I can't remember. All I can think of is Eric O'Grady, and that's not him.
No, which one is it? Scott.
Scott Lang.
Scott Lang. Yeah. So, having just seen it, the thing, what's interesting, the action scenes in this movie are really good, but the themes of the film are so much meatier than anything that they've done, even with Cap, with Captain America, even Winter Soldier. There was the Hydra thing, and the thing that was amazing about the Hydra thing was how it blew up the entire Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Just like the minute that happened,
it was very flashy.
You know, everything changed.
Yep.
Everywhere. It wasn't just Captain America.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Winter Soldier is like this iconic point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Where everything, including like on television shows, the whole thing just blows up and goes 50 different directions. And this one, it felt like it was really. And I think the tough thing with it was, it really is more of an Avengers movie than a Cap movie. And I know that they tried to focus on Cap to keep it a Captain America movie. But the only Avengers that we've met to this point that weren't in this film were Thor and Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, and...
But the Avengers that are appearing in this movie are really only in, like, two fight scenes.
Yeah. But and that's true. But, I mean, it is about the Avengers. And it's really... And there's a... It's almost... It's almost as much Iron Man movie, Tony Stark's movie, as it is Steve Rogers' movie, because you've got to give enough time to Tony Stark to have him not come off as a complete dick.
I think they did a good job with that, because here's the two things that the two overarching things I saw in it were, number one is the reason that it's a Captain America movie is because the Civil War that's going on that matters the most is the one that's going on inside Cap. And that is the fact that he has devoted his whole life to the government and doing what the government says, and what the law says. The law is right. It doesn't matter what...
Lawful good.
Lawful good. And now the law is wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad law, and it's an evil law the way he sees it. And so now the Civil War is him trying to struggle between this new feeling of like, being, you know, anti-government and being on the run and being one of the quote-unquote bad guys. So that I think I understand. But, like, the stuff with Iron Man is so clearly his guilt for having created Ultron. And even though Steve specifically was like, don't do this thing.
Yeah.
This will go bad. Don't do this thing. I don't think you can control it. And it's the hubris of him and Banner, but mostly him, that caused this to happen. And so his only reaction is atonement, which is great, because the thing that causes the problem in the Civil War comics is a character who is named Speedball. And after this happens and he does it, he changes his name and becomes a character named Penance, who is trying to hurt himself and is really fucked up and is like going through this whole really... really awful, like, psychological and physical hair shirt kind of thing to atone for what he's done. And that's very much in line with the Iron Man story in the movie, which I thought was really cool, because he is doing the same thing. He's willing to give up his, you know, a freedom, and he's willing to give up the suit, and he's willing to be, you know, a good loyal lapdog to the government. Who do he hates? The government? It's fucking Tony Stark.
In the comics, one of the two best things to come out of... No, I'm going to say, like, the best thing to come out of Civil War in the comics was afterward, the superhuman registration list is in Tony's head. He has it, like, stored there. His brain is like a hard drive. And Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, ends up taking over S.H.I.E.L.D. and changing it to Hammer. And he's like, all right, I need the list now. Please give me the list.
Which is my right, because I'm in charge. It's my right.
I'm in charge of this aspect of the government now, so...
Like how Trump's going to get the nuke codes.
I get this list, and Tony Stark, rather than let this happen, formats his brain while going on the run. And it's like the end of Flowers for Algernon. He's slowly getting dumber and dumber. Mm-hmm. And he's aware of the fact that he's going to be dumber, so he's leaving himself notes and programming his suit to help him.
Memento style.
And he's just slowly going brain dead while on the run from Norman Osborn, because he realizes how bad he fucked up and it's his responsibility and he has to protect the list. So he does. And he gets this redemption. And I was kind of... Like, I feel like the way this movie ended, like, how Winter Soldier ended, it was like, ha-ha, there's Hydra now, everything's fucked up, mwah! And it set the stage for more stuff after that.
Phase 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this did the same thing, but for some reason, it didn't feel as fulfilling. Like, I felt like I needed a little bit more closure in it that I didn't get. I'm not unhappy with the movie, I just...
Yeah,
I want to see it again.
It's a tough... Yeah. It's an ending that's unsatisfying, because the Avengers are still fractured, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Steve Rogers is still on the run. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's extended an olive branch, but he's still very much on the run, along with other members of the Avengers who he's sprung from jail.
Yeah.
You know, you still have this government oversight thing that is putting people in prison without due process.
Yeah.
You know, you still have Baron Zemo... Who they, you know, T'Challa didn't kill. Okay, well, that makes sense for his character. And yet, you don't feel like he's done.
And it seems like there's going to be probably a lot of... I mean, I don't know, maybe we'll see some Secret Avengers stuff. Like, maybe there'll be the whole thing where they're... Because the Secret Avengers is... two teams where one of them is all on the run and they're still doing their hero thing in secret. You know, there could be some cool stuff there.
Yeah, but I mean, you're in a situation where, you know, what's the deal with Black Widow? She clearly crossed the line.
Yeah.
And clearly is on a short leash.
Sharon Carter, Agent 13. She's a government agent, ex-SHIELD agent, and she clearly aids and abets Cap and them and is on their side. Well, and where is her place?
Yeah. Also, can we just have a quick moment? Not a moment of silence, but just if you have one, pour a little out for Agent Peggy Carter, died twice in 1 week, both times off screen.
Yeah.
That was sad and depressing news to find out that got canceled, but...
There's two touch on relationship things that happened in the movie that I loved. So Sharon Carter and Steve and Cap, get their kiss.
That was long overdue. That was late.
Or whatever.
That was cute.
Was super great. They date in the comics. They're adorable. And then the Vision and Scarlet Witch, who have been married in the comics. They've had fake psychic trauma children in the comics.
It's so fucked up.
And so they've historically they've been like a couple in Marvel Comics, and they clearly show that they have there's like some interpersonal tension.
They've been spending intimate time together, just in each other's company.
Her powers are created by the gem in Loki's staff. When Hydra was testing with it, that's also the gem used to bring Vision to life. That's in his head.
Interesting.
Which is one of the Infinity Stones.
Right, but they're tied together, like their fates are tied. Yeah. Yeah. Their creation stories are linked, and they're both creation stories. The same movie, Age of Ultron, and they're like there was just that moment when he was trying to stop her from leaving and they kind of, I don't know. I liked it. I was soft for that.
Paul Bettany's great. His way of doing the Vision is great. His not quite flat affect. I wouldn't say quite robotic, but he definitely has, a good kind of
alien,
android alien, just sort of a blink blink when he's thinking and you can tell when he's you can tell that he's processing on a very high level before sometimes he answers things.
Well, and his response to the Accord is logically, we have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is completely different from everybody else's response.
Yeah.
Whether pro or con. Yep. He's just I'm sitting here, I'm doing the math. This is what we have to do.
And that's Reed Richards in the comics. Reed, the Illuminati that kind of start the gears in motion for Civil War, I mean, one of them is Reed Richards, who has done the math and does say, look, things are going to be really bad at some point. And this might not be a good solution, but it is the best solution out of anything we have. If we don't do this, I've done all the simulations, I've done all the calculations, we're boned if this doesn't happen. And what he doesn't know is that the Skrulls have already infiltrated the Earth for secret invasion, and the Civil War leaves the world depleted of superheroes, so they're all disorganized and not prepped to defend the Earth against an invasion, and that's why Norman Osborn's in charge, is because the villains save the Earth against the invasion.
That's great.
Which sure seems like a possibility when you're going into the Infinity Gauntlet storyline.
Yeah!
In Avengers, because the Avengers are fractured, and there's no way that the fractured Avengers...
If they do Secret Invasion, I will lose my shit. That is my favorite storyline ever in Marvel.
I think they could do it with the first, so the Russo brothers that directed this and directed Winter Soldier, they're directing both Infinity movies, and they both said that Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2, those are working titles, and they are also both very different movies, and it's not like a Part 1, Part 2, it's a movie and then another movie that is led into or set by the other one, but... Why couldn't we get one that's like a secret invasion and one that's, I don't know.
Could be good.
I'd be down.
There's no Jessica Drew, but...
There's no Skrulls.
Yeah. They would have to be like Chitauri or something stupid. Yeah.
We'll get Captain Marvel by then, too.
I think the hardest thing about these movies is they really are starting to become like a story arc. I mean, each movie has its own story, but at the same time, there are all these characters, and they're characters that you care about, and they keep bringing in new characters, and that doesn't piss me off. I mean, Black Panther, fucking awesome. I like Black Panther, but at the same time, you're frustrated because, you know, you like Hawkeye, and he gets, you know, not too much time, but they actually, I gotta say, they always do a very good job of giving the individual characters' moments.
Yep. Mm. And reasons why they're not maybe in the whole thing.
Yeah. Right.
That there's always a good reason, and they set it up, and they,
That's always been such a Joss Whedon thing to me. It's like no character is a supporting character. They all get their moment where they're the hero.
Yeah.
I feel like they did that in this, too.
You know, you could easily... Ant-Man and Spider-Man, I think, are some of the best examples in this movie, where they're really just in that little chunk where all the heroes are going to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then we really don't see much of them anymore. And yet... In that fight, they both get moments that define them and make you remember them. Now, and somebody on the internet was like saying this was the best Spider-Man that we've ever had, and I disagree.
What?
Because Spider-Man 2 is fucking awesome.
Ugh.
But
how about this?
Spider-Man 2 with Andrew Garfield?
No.
Then you're wrong. Because he's the best Spider-Man otherwise.
He's the best Peter Parker. And I don't know about the best Spider-Man, but...
I love
it's the best Spider-Man origin story we've ever seen.
That's a good, yeah.
I loved this Spider-Man because he was actually young. I like this.
That's a huge point.
This kid's actually like 15.
Yeah, now we're talking about the actor and not the story.
The actor matters.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. The actor matters. Look at the dude playing Captain America. I mean, like, look at that dude. If they had like a more slender guy who they, you know, bleached his hair, and I mean, has the thing. He has the thing that makes
like
him good.
RDJ for Iron Man.
Right.
Like, it's the same thing.
Yes,
dude is Tony Stark.
And part of what makes Spider-Man such a crazy hero is he's little and he's young, and that's why he says things that no one else says. It's not because he's not Deadpool, he's not, you know, the hero with a mouth. He's a kid who doesn't know any better, and he's making jokes because he's uncomfortable and he's a nerd. And
I like that it seemed like he was working on his banter. Like, there was a lot of Spider-Man banter, but it wasn't A-list material yet. Yeah. So it's like he's still getting his training.
I liked that when he got fucked up because he's a little kid. And he got the shit kicked out of him, and he was like, "All right, man, you're out of this fight." He's like, "No, but," he's like, "Listen, like, you're done." And he's like, "Okay, thanks." You know, and like, that was great because like that makes sense. He doesn't have powers in that way.
Mechanical shooters, like I'm on board. Like mechanical shooters. I thought Aunt May was great, and the joke stuff there.
What made me laugh the most about Aunt May was how angry some people were. They're like, since when is Aunt May like young and hot? And it's like, Marissa Tomei's 51. Since when can't a 51-year-old woman be the aunt to like a 15-year-old kid?
It makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
It's like Aunt May always was like this...
Way too old.
They never said she was a great aunt, but she would have to be.
She was so old.
She's like 70 and Peter's like a teenager.
That's why this was... I think it's because it was written in a time when people got old younger. Like, I see pictures of my great-grandma when she's 40. All her hair is gray. I mean, she's just, it was a harder life. She lived in the Depression, you know, so that it makes sense that when Spider-Man was written, that would happen. But now, that's Aunt May. And I love Iron Man being like, you know, like,
strangely like, hot aunt.
Yeah, that's your aunt. I would fuck your aunt into next week. Like, that's all I
I'm single right now, so.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
One thing that I wanted to talk about or mention is Baron Zemo, who is traditionally a leader of a group of villains or the Thunderbolts masquerading as heroes or something. Strong ties to the Nazi side of Hydra, Helmut Zemo. He never actually fights the Avengers once in the entire movie, and he is the primary antagonist.
That's interesting.
That's awesome.
Who does he fight? Just T'Challa?
He doesn't fight anybody.
He never fights anyone in the entire movie. Other.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does. He does.
Your plan didn't work. Didn't it? That was so good.
He bombs a building, and then he eggs people on, and then he sends a videotape to Tony Stark, and like, what does he do? Pull strings from the background like a criminal mastermind.
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't. I read people online, they were like, nobody fought a villain in this entire movie. And it's like, Civil War, asshole, it's in the name. Like,
the villain is the one that's making the fight happen. What's great about it is he uses the Avengers, the tide against the
and
Avengers.
The Sokovia Accords and Molly, it's funny that you mentioned Trump earlier because it's similar. It's be careful what you use as political leverage because someone else can use that as political leverage as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
that's what happens in Civil War in the comics with Hammer. I mean, that's the thing is like, let's write down all the names of all of the superhumans and make sure we know where they all live and what their powers are. What could possibly go wrong? No one could get their hands on that list with bad intentions because we're the government and we're going to keep it safe. That's exactly it.
It's the same thing here. You know, the whole idea that the government, you understand Tony Stark's point of view. I think he's wrong. And I think you need to. I mean, I think it's Captain America's film. Tony Stark's got to be on the wrong side.
Yeah.
I mean, and I realize there are probably some people that watch
that
film.
There are a lot of people who are Team Iron Man. It's amazing to me. Yeah, we got into fights at work, actually. It was pretty great.
I don't get it. Because, you know, when you see what those accords are doing, you know, when you see people get stuck into prison,
it's like 9/11. It's like the terrorist watch list that happened after that. We should make all the Muslims register so we know which ones are the good ones and all that.
The U.S. government asshole pushing for all this is General Ross, Thunderbolt Ross, the Hulk villain. And so it's like, once again, to solve a problem of superheroes, General Thunderbolt Ross fucks everything up and makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah.
Like, just...
Oh, man.
I'm so excited for Wakanda and Black Panther and Spider-Man. And I feel like this set the stage for other movies, but that doesn't detract from it being a good movie on its own.
And next week, Doctor Strange.
It's a little bit of a bridge movie.
Yeah.
I think that's
Empire Strikes Back syndrome.
Yeah, that's what makes it a little... what do I want to say? It's a challenging movie. It's not a movie that is easy to evaluate without knowing what happened before, because you've got to understand why Stark is doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's Age of Ultron.
It's crazy. Well, even before that, the Avengers and Iron Man 3, he has this crazy fucking existential crisis when he... Mm-hmm. goes through that portal and like the nuke and all that, the end of Adventures. Yep. And in Iron Man 3, he gets all his shit so fucked up and his technology gets used against him, and like science is the villain and he's not in a good mental place.
I obviously that iconic scene with the, you know, like, you know, I can't let you do this, he's my friend and so was I and all that is so great. Yeah. But at
the same time, I mean, here's that's a moment where it's like, what Stark's doing is indefensible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, you understand why he's so angry.
Yeah.
But he's trying to kill somebody who ultimately was not responsible for the death of his parents.
Well, not only that.
He was a tool.
Yep.
That's all he was. He was a tool of somebody else.
And he was framed for the other thing they want him for.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the thing I think people forget is it's so easy to forget how sad it must be to be Steve Rogers and how hard that must be. Mm, and with Peggy having just died, I think it's important she died in this movie because that was it. She was the last connection to his past besides Bucky.
Except Bucky.
And Bucky's all he has left. And when Bucky looks at him and Bucky's like, and he's like, "Do you know who I am?" And he's like, "You used to put newspapers in your shoes. Your mom's name was Sarah." And this is the only person on Earth who remembers him.
I didn't even put that together.
And that's why he's going to defend him with his life. Not only that, but then they were in that same, they were in a unit together, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
It's this thing where like you could not possibly, so when Tony Stark is like, "So was I," to me, I was like, "Fuck you. You are not his friend in the same way. I'm sorry. It's not even close to the same thing."
And Bucky,
He was saving his parents.
It's Tony Stark's parents, but you got to remember that he killed a friend of Rogers too.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
It's like but Rogers but he's able to, you know, separate that.
Yep.
He was being used as a tool.
Yep.
You know, and at that moment Stark is not. And it really highlights the difference in the kind of control the two of them have.
Well, and the difference in being a playboy billionaire inventor who has never wanted for anything and who has had things come very easily to him.
Used to a CEO style of top-down management.
And then being a man in this man's army who not only was just a grunt in the army, but then was turned into a weapon and trotted out at all those shows and made to punch Hitler over and over and turned into a poster boy. I mean, he's been used. Yeah. He knows what it feels like to be a tool of the government like that. So I think if you think of it from that way, I don't see how anyone couldn't be team Cap.
It's too bad none of us are team Iron Man, because then we could have that argument.
Yeah.
I'm glad
none of us are team Iron Man, because we're all good people with hearts and morals.
So before we go to five questions.
Understand that the government isn't always right.
Right?
Yeah. Before we go to five questions, I heard a cool rumor about Spider-Man Homecoming, which is the name of the upcoming Sony.
I hope he goes to a homecoming dance.
Right? He's got it. It's in the name. So the title's Spider-Man Homecoming, and it's a Marvel Sony joint project. It's in the MCU, and the rumor is Marvel has been in talks with Vincent D'Onofrio to reprise his role as Kingpin.
No.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that would be kind of sexy.
It's been reported by a couple different places that are like have a pretty good reputation for comic
and In Talks is safe. That's great.
But who knows? Maybe it was for, you know, more Daredevil, but they haven't been talking about Daredevil season 3 because the Defenders is going to happen before that.
That'd be so great.
So anyway, I'd love him as a Spider-Man villain because he is. It's great.
He's a good villain. Right.
Molly, are our answers from?
We have answers today from Cheryl Rodriguez.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Yes.
Should I do question number one?
Oh, hold on. She has a little small intro.
Small intro.
She just wants to say, thanks for doing the show. I listen every week, and I love the vibe, content, and personalities. Just everything.
Oh.
This was a fun exercise. Now I'm thinking about doing something like this with my Skeptics in the Pub group. This seems like a good way to get a discussion going and to get to know each other better. And she is located in Pickney, Michigan.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Yeah, Tim.
Michigan heard from. Question number one, what's a movie you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Best in Show.
Yay.
Oh my God, I love this movie. That was me, not her. I love all the Christopher Guest and gang mockumentary movies, starting with This is Spinal Tap and including A Mighty Wind and Waiting for Guffman. Quick note, Cheryl, if you haven't watched For Your Consideration, that movie is fucking amazing.
And
very funny. All right. And I would stop any activity for any of them. But something about the eclectic group of characters in Best in Show stays with me all the time. The story involves multiple people who own show dogs, and we viewers follow them as they journey to participate in the big show. My family, husband and two grown daughters.
The Westminster Kennel Club, thank you very much.
Love to quote the redneck hound dog owner played by Christopher Guest when he tells a story about naming nuts and how it, this is my favorite too, by the way, and how it drove his mother crazy. Here's a partial quote. She says, please imagine this with a slow country southern drawl, but we can do better than that. Okay, this is the quote. Harlan Pepper, if you don't stop naming nuts, And the joke was that we lived in Pine Nut, and I think that's what put it in my mind at that point. So she would hear me in the other room, and she'd just start yelling, and I'd say, peanut, hazelnut, cashew nut, macadamia nut. That was the one that would send her into going crazy. She'd say, would you stop naming nuts? Oh, my God. Okay. And then there is the couple, the wife is Parker Posey, who are both wearing braces on their teeth. Jane Lynch is a dog trainer, and Fred Willard is the clueless announcer at the show, to name a few more reasons to watch the movie. My favorite thing with Fred Willard is...
So clueless.
So the British guy that is playing the other announcer...
Yeah, I can't remember that actor's name.
Yeah, what they did was, they're like, you're playing this straight, this is your job, you're very professional, and then Fred Willard is your goofy counter. And then they didn't tell him, and Fred Willard improvised most of it.
Well, they told Fred Willard, do not learn anything about
dogs. Yeah, don't learn anything and say anything you can. And so my favorite line is like, he's saying like, oh, this is a good dog and saying a bunch of stuff, and Fred Willard goes, you know, it's sad to think that in some countries they would eat these dogs. And the British guy just looks at him with this look of naked horror, what is wrong with you? All right, that's a great fucking movie. Yeah, I love it so much.
That entire set of movies I love. My favorite is probably A Mighty Wind, just because it hits
the music for you. And I feel the same about Waiting for Guffman, because I did enough shitty community little theater.
Waiting for Guffman.
Best in Show is my favorite, but I got a real strong point for Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap's amazing. Awesome Best in Show is great.
They're all really good.
For Your Consideration is a lot better than... I watched it once and it was forgettable, but we watched it again recently and it's a lot funnier than I remembered.
I think For Your Consideration is like after... Because it was right after Mighty Wind. That was the third in a row.
Yeah.
It was like Guffman was so funny, Mighty Wind was so funny, and Best in Show was so funny. And this one came out, and compared to those, it's slower paced and maybe not as funny. But like going back, it really is funny.
The jokes are a little more inside baseball. I think you have to be a little more inside the acting game to
really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a little more depressing for sure.
Question number two, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
This may not seem geeky to the Geeks Without God audience, but my geekiest love is talking and reading about religion. I frequently have to rein myself in when anyone shows the slightest inclination to discuss religion from a social or historical perspective. Given that, my geekiest possessions are probably my books about religions and the history of religions, mostly Christianity. I love learning about the crazy revival periods in the United States, especially the ones that produced the JWs and LDSs, as well as the corresponding Enlightenment and free thought periods that seem to always happen before and after the revivals. Mm. As you can imagine, a related geeky possession would be my collection of atheist podcasts, including Geeks Without God, of course. Even more than the books, this is something that few acquaintances understand. What's a podcast? But I'm always on the lookout for a kindred atheist podcast lover spirit.
Someone, I think, at Rachel's wedding, Maggie Heck was telling me about Morgan Freeman narrates some show on the National Geographic Channel about the history of religions.
Oh, cool.
Or it's like the history of God.
Interesting.
Or something like that. And she said, oh, you guys may want to do an episode about it sometime. But it's all about just the history of the worship of gods general.
Yeah. Question number three, which I'm going to remember in just a minute, is what supernatural being do you wish was real?
I didn't have an immediate response for this, so I had to think about it for a while. What supernatural being could be useful for humans and the rest of the Earth's creatures without causing more fighting? I finally came up with a rain god that has limited powers. Farmers could pray to the rain god when it's needed for their crops, and the rest of us would benefit from the additional food and water. But the god could not create floods or mudslides or do anything that would be considered harmful. And as a side benefit, maybe a real and helpful god would help us get rid of those made-up wackos that want to control everything we do.
That is super specific.
Some sort of water elemental or a naiad or something?
Yeah, like a beneficent... Yeah,
benevolent water elemental. Yeah, all
that's
right.
Great.
That's good.
Question number four is... Say religion is gone, what is the biggest problem that humanity faces?
I think misogyny is one of the worst scourges that affects all of humanity. It sickens me to think about the generational and socially acceptable practice of suppressing and abusing women that occurs all over the world, including in our own country.
Yeah, Tim.
Imagine a world...
Yeah, I'm a misogynist. Fuck.
Imagine a world with true equality of the sexes, women controlling the size of their families, having a greater impact on government, becoming more educated. Not only would we probably be a more peaceful society, but there would just be a lot more happy people in the world. If religion were gone, however, maybe misogyny would also go away, since religion is probably one of the largest tools used to suppress women. We can only hope that both will happen. That's great.
Yeah.
Religion, I mean, there is a lot of it in religion. I agree, but I think, I feel like religion is used as an excuse for what's already there. Because mm-hmm. there's a pretty big misogynist contingent within atheism.
I think that a lot of it is, you know, societal. But where it may have historically stemmed from is religion.
Yep.
But, like, that's not why it's sticking around.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Not entirely.
Well, and it's I mean, not even hard. It is literally impossible to know if there would be such a large contingency of misogyny in atheism if most people who are atheists hadn't come from a religious background.
Good point.
And so, I mean, I don't think I've ever met somebody who was raised, who's like a second generation atheist who is a misogynist. I mean, I haven't met many of them, but it seems like that's less and less
likely.
Small
sample size.
Yeah. But I think maybe a lot of it is just being raised by parents who were raised by parents who were raised by parents to think that women are lesser.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That could be. Okay, question number 5. What's your favorite quote?
I'm a technical writer, and I also write poetry, so it's no surprise that my favorite quote is about writing. Or maybe it's my favorite quote because it's short and I can actually remember it. This is the quote. The road to hell is paved with adverbs. Stephen King. I love that quote. And then she also has, bad writing hurts my eyeballs. Me. Thanks again, Cheryl Rodriguez.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl.
That Stephen King quote is a good one. That one and Kill Your Darlings. Those are his two pieces of advice for writers.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was our episode on Civil War. If you want to talk about Marvel movies or what you thought about Civil War, you can comment on Facebook or on geekswithoutgod.com. Or on Twitter, if it's short. And
yeah, like 140 characters. Although, you can do more than 140 characters on Twitter now.
Apparently.
Yeah, that's a
good thing. It gets truncated, but you can expand it or whatever.
Something. Yeah.
But the character database size limit had changed anyway because of emoji, like, a few years ago. And
right.
It was an arbitrary limit set by some German guy based on text messages or something.
Yeah.
For real.
Just the way you said it just sounded
funny. It's based on the SMS character limitation, which some German guy who just said, who could ever need more than this many characters in a message?
In Germany, we're very efficient with our words.
Yeah, exactly. But feel free to let us know what you thought about Civil War or any theories about upcoming Marvel movies. That's fun. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and like us there. As always, we post everything at geekswithoutgod.com. We're also on Patreon, and
yay.
I want to take a minute to thank everyone that supported us there. It's great. We're really new there, and it's been awesome. We're already talking about some fun stuff to do with the financial support those of you who are supporting us have offered.
On our next episode, we're going to thank everybody who supported us so far.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Like, woo! On the podcast, we're going to say
podcast.
Your name.
It's going to happen.
Podcast.
Yeah. All right. Otherwise, we're Geeks Without God, and
true.
We'll see you next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Wakanda, where our medals are invulnerable and our king dresses as a cat.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
I will fetch my woman, and I will also empty my bladder.
Yes. On your woman.
No.